So Gene will be happy.
Yeah, now it's coming through.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, they have it.
This is hers.
Right.
Yeah, might as well, aren't we?
We're moving back to our ordinary spot.
Betty, please come to order. It's Tuesday, February 27th at 1:30 in Betty Fahrenkamp's room. And we're here today to hear SB 300, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code, and Senate Bill 299, an act requiring competition in local exchange telephone service. Senate Bill 43, an act relating to membership on the Board of Registration for Architects, has been held over until Thursday's meeting. There is a meeting going on tomorrow that we anticipate will result in some compromised language in a particular section of that bill. We intend to move that bill out on Thursday. Let's start today with Senate Bill 300, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code. 299, of course, is the big draw today. So Art Peterson, Arthur, where are you? Why don't you give us a five-minute overview on Senate Bill 300? For the committee's attention, we do have a memorandum from Jeff Bush, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce, Economic Development. Goes Kirkpatrick, Division of Banking, and they do not object to any of the provisions in Senate Bill 300. Art, 5 minutes, huh?
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
sorry.
It's all right. That didn't scare me at all. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Art Peterson. I'm an attorney in private practice here in Juneau with the law firm of Dillon and Finley. I'm appearing in my role as a Uniform Law Commissioner for the state. And clearly this is a bill supported by, drafted by, and promulgated by the Uniform Law Commissioners, the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. Most of you probably know that's an organization now about in its 104th year, roughly 300 lawyers, judges, law professors, etc. The drafting process for any of our products, takes several years. There's a drafting committee, usually with several advisors, a scholar who is a reporter for the committee, and then it goes to the floor of the full conference, all 300 or so people, and it goes through at least two readings in separate years, and sometimes it's three or four. As you probably also know, the Uniform Commercial Code has been enacted in virtually all jurisdictions of the United States. Louisiana has adopted only part of it, and there are a couple of other individual exceptions. Article 8 is based on, which is represented by this bill, is based on the 1909 Uniform Stock Transfer Act. That then was worked into the UCC when that was developed in the 1950s, and it was then revised in 1977 in response to the paperwork crunch. Some of you who hold shares of stock or bonds will know of the paperwork crunch that suddenly hit the market in the 60s. It's been developing continuously ever since then, so that what was 28 million shares on an average day in the 50s is now something like 280 million shares. To address that, the conference came up with the concept of uncertificated securities in 77. That was a partial step. Alaska enacted that, but it proved to be inadequate. The states were slow in enacting it. Corporations were then reluctant to issue these uncertificated securities, and simultaneously there was developing the system of clearing corporations, the indirect holding of securities. And securities we're talking about would include both stocks, bonds, interest in limited partnerships, mutual fund shares, etc. In this bill, Senate Bill 300, the bulk of it is devoted to the amendment of Article 8. You will find some amendments on page 1 pertaining to Article 1 of the UCC. In our numbering system, those articles become chapters. The material on page 1 and material following page 39 are compatibility amendments. So the bulk of this bill is between pages 2 and 39. And what it does is recognize both the technology, the increase in population, which increases the number of people buying shares, buying investments, and it recognizes the development of this clearing corporation system of holding securities. It's an indirect way of holding securities, and because of that, the old traditional notions, the old traditional rules don't apply. There are so many questions that are unanswered by the existing Article 8 that we have to adopt new material to cover all of these questions, deal with the relationship between the investor and the broker and the intermediary, and a variety of transfer questions that arise because of this new indirect relationship. I'm not sure how much you have in your packets. I, of course, have a whole bunch of material here. But if I could read you just about 8 points on a little list of what they tell us are the main features of this 50-page bill. This revised Article 8, it establishes consumers' specific rights in their securities accounts in relationship to their brokers and dealers. It enables customers of broker-dealers to obtain credit that is secured by the securities accounts. And that was a major problem in the 1987 stock market crash. It makes it easier for broker-dealers to obtain secured credit on their accounts with the securities depositories, these intermediate holding corporations. It helps avoid a meltdown because broker-dealers cannot obtain credit when a market crashes. That was one of the major features the analysts attribute that 87 crash to. It gives creditors better control over collateral that includes securities accounts. It assures smoother function of securities markets over the long term. It reduces the prospect of litigation over broker-dealer customer relationships. It assures that the transfer rules for securities will remain state law rather than federal regulation. And it makes it easier and less risky for people to invest through broker-dealers. And I should say that...
could we ask that you give that those 8 points to the committee staff so we'll have that?
Sure. And I can furnish any other material you like to the committee. That's basically it. I believe you already have in your packets the list of little blurbs from the nation's leading stock market, securities and exchange people that each tell why this is very urgent, why it's worthwhile, why we need to do it right away.
Okay, for the record, would it please indicate that Senator Miller Ferguson, Kelly Duncan, and Sato are present? Are there any questions of Mr. Peterson? Okay, Arthur, I will ask you to be certain you're in the galleries the day that this bill hits the floor. I don't want to have to try to explain it to anybody. And what we're going to do is we'll hold on to it till Thursday. If we don't hear any opposition to the bill, we'll move it out on Thursday.
Okay.
Any further questions? Okay, thanks, Arthur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee.
Yeah, we do have a position paper from the administration. Yes, we do.
Yes.
Yeah. No one would ask you to carry.
That brings us to Senate Bill 299, an act requiring competition in local exchange telephone service. It was introduced by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee by request. We start out the testimony, I suspect, with Jimmy Johnson, who is DCI.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jimmy Jackson. I am an attorney, and I'm employed by GCI. I'm not an outside counsel, but work with GCI. My address is 2550 Denali Street in Anchorage. And phone number is 265-5545. I am here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 299. As I think most of you know, the United States Congress passed a rewrite of telecommunications law a matter of a few weeks ago. That bill was passed by overwhelming margins, something like 450 to 10 in the House and 90-something votes in the Senate, and it was passed with the strong support and indeed direction of Senator Stevens. The central purpose of that federal telecommunications bill is to open all telecommunication markets to competition. Now, why did Congress decide to do this? The short answer is that over the past 20 years or so, various segments of the telecommunications market have been opened up to competition, always with much opposition and some reluctance and always predictions of disaster. And in each instance, good things have happened. In every instance, from when the telephone instruments themselves were allowed to have something other than a black rotary phone hooked up to the phone system through long distance and then to wireless service, as these services were opened up to competition, consumers got better choices and prices went down and the quality of services became better. And so, in short, competition in the remaining markets, including the local service market, will bring the same type benefits which have already been brought to the other telecommunications markets. And we're talking about a lot more than just being able to get the same service maybe for a dollar less. It's a lot more than just that. We're talking about such as just as the market for competition in the equipment end of it has taken us from black rotary phones to fax machines, and just as in the wireless market, it's gone from the 3-pound clunker that you had to have in your car when cellular first came on the market to the little flip-top phone that you can put in your pocket. The quality of services which will be brought about by competition will be much better. An example of this in the local market is if you or any of your family are internet surfers, frequently takes quite some time to download information off the internet. I mean, you can sort of get a little bit bored waiting there for the graphics. There are technologies which will increase the speed of that download into your computer much, much faster. And that's the type of innovation and type of new service that will be brought to you if competition is allowed to enter these markets. Maybe just on a simpler basis, there are places in the state, it's been a problem on the Kenai Peninsula, where people who want phones have to wait quite some time, a matter of weeks, months, to get the phone hooked up from their local phone company. You know, a new provider who's there saying, I'll do it for you, will speed up the process of getting that service installed to local people who want local phone service. So the federal bill opens up telecommunications markets to competition, but it leaves the implementation to the state and to the State Public Utilities Commission. It also has certain provisions where carriers can get exceptions from some of the specific rules which are laid out in the federal law. And again, those are left to the State Public Utilities Commission to decide. As with any big policy, the way it will actually work in practice will depend tremendously on how it is implemented by the people who are making the final decisions. And in this case, that is the state and the APUC. There are many people who will go to the APUC and who will say that Congress passed this law, but they really didn't understand Alaska, and you shouldn't allow competition in Alaska. And they will ask the APUC to, wherever possible, put up roadblocks and construe things as narrowly as possible. The same argument that was made for years and years to keep GCI out of the long-distance business in Alaska. Finally, we got through that, and none of the disasters which were predicted happened. Quite the opposite. Service has gotten better, and rates have gone down. So what this bill does is, the purpose of this bill, is to set the state policy by the legislature and to say that the state recognizes that competition in local telephone service will bring these benefits. The APUC in implementing the act and in making all the decisions which will still be left within their discretion, they will implement that policy with the recognition that you, as the legislature, have said, in making these decisions, recognize that competition will bring good things to the local network, just as it's brought to the other telecommunications markets. So it is the legislature setting the policy, which the APUC will keep in their mind as they make all the specific implementation decisions that have to be made. It will not take away their authority to make those implementation decisions. If I can address a number of concerns which have been expressed regarding the bill, and frankly, we did have a hearing this morning, and a lot of concerns were raised there, questions were asked, and I'd like to address some of those things which I think will come up. One question is the cost of this bill at the APUC level. This bill should not cost the APUC anything. Implementing the federal legislation is certainly going to be a difficult task and probably is going to cost them something. But this bill is not going to add on to that. This bill, if anything, will make it somewhat easier because it takes an argument about whether or not competition is good off the table. But it doesn't add to their burden beyond what's already there in the federal legislation. Another issue about which there's a lot of concern is whether or not competitors may come into a local market and cream skim or cherry pick. Just take the very best customers, not serve anybody else, and leave the losers to the existing company. There is an existing protection against that in the federal legislation. What the federal legislation says is that if a new entrant wants to come in and provide local service, the state commission can, as a condition of granting that, say, yes, you can provide local service, but we're not going to allow you just to serve the core market. You have to serve the entire service area of the existing company. That's protection that's written into the federal legislation. It will remain there even with this legislation. This doesn't change that. Another concern which has been expressed is whether or not this is going to somehow undermine universal service, the concept that everyone should have a telephone, access to telephone, and reasonable rates. The federal law, again, the new federal law, has extensive provisions which are meant to protect universal service even as competition is introduced. So that is specifically addressed in the federal legislation. There are also two state statutes which are already on the books, which tell the APUC that they should consider universal service in all of their decisions. Those are in the APUC Act. It's 4205-145 and 4205-840. So there's existing protections in state and federal law for universal service, which are not undercut by this bill. There has also been the concern that this bill lays out that there ought to be competition in local phone service, but it doesn't say anything about how there ought to be competition in long-distance phone service. Well, this bill doesn't do that, but you've already done that. You did that about 5 years ago, or 1990, I guess 6 years ago, when you passed 4205-800, which said the findings are very similar to what this bill has, and essentially said that you've decided at that time that competition in long-distance service was a good idea and was in the public interest, and it told the APUC to implement competition. And that's why GCI exists in the in-state market today. If there were barriers to competition in long-distance business, we wouldn't be here providing it today to a very large number of Alaskans. So that's already been taken care of. And I guess the only other topic, which I maybe just very briefly address, is there's been some comparison of the competition here to maybe in the electric arena where there's been a little bit more resistance. And on that topic, I think there are very big differences in the industry, so that because you may think that competition might not be good in the electric arena, that does not necessarily carry over into the telephone arena. There are, for several different reasons. One of the means by which competition will enter the phone industry is through the existing cable telephone company, which already has the duplicate wires in many locations. It will come through wireless services, which is a more generic name just for cellular. And In those instances, you don't have this enormous duplication of facilities and replacement of existing facilities that you might have in the electric arena. That's all the comments I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, Mr. Jackson, we'd ask you to stick around in case there are some at a later date.
Thank you.
Mr. James Rowe with the Alaska Telephone Association.
My name is James Rowe, R-O-W-E. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Telephone Association at 4341 B Street, Anchorage. Telephone number 563-4000. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to address this committee. I'm representing the Alaska Telephone Association, which is comprised of 22 local exchange carriers, local telephone companies that serve the state of Alaska. I'm here today in opposition to this bill, particularly because the federal legislation, which passed on February 8th, was many years in formation, was very contentious, is over 200 pages long, and it's surprising that a one-page bill at state level could address the issues within a week of the passage of that legislation that apparently our federal government has struggled with so long. The bill at federal level is pro-competition. It's changed a public policy, or it is attempting to change a public policy that has been in existence since 1934. However, there's a great deal of legislative intent in that federal bill that also addresses universal service. And universal service means the product that we are delivering to all the citizens in our country. I think, as we also worked with Senator Stevens very closely, as Mr. Jackson mentioned, they did, got a lot of attention. I think Senator Stevens recognized the rural and remote areas that are in our state, and I think his power allowed many of the other people who voted overwhelmingly for that legislation to realize that there are areas of the country that are truly rural and truly remote, and that in the public interest, there should be a determination made that indeed competition is going to serve the citizens out there. The members of the Alaska Telephone Association feel like it's imperative that if the federal government in Washington, D.C., in a very urban environment, can recognize that there might be difficulties in reaching some of our rural areas, that particularly our state legislature should also look at that. Within this legislation, the federal, there are many mandates for the state, many, many things that we have to do. Our Public Utilities Commission is going to have to learn to regulate in an arena of competition, which they haven't had to do before. They're going to be learning a new game. The title of this bill, An Act Requiring Competition in the Local Exchange Telephone Service, this is requiring it. The federal legislation does not require it. It allows the opportunity and it encourages it. But it allows very much that there be a determination made that the public interest shall be served in the area. And what this bill is asking us for is to determine by legislative mandate that if there is competition, that is public interest. And I'd ask you to question why we are doing that when the federal government is allowing us to offer an opportunity for decision-making at the state level. And we're, through legislation, having the opportunity to omit that opportunity. The Alaska Telephone Association has been working on language. We do need a bill. We do need the state to be involved. Our Public Utility Commission has asked for direction from the legislature. There are many things that have to be done, but it's a far more complex issue than can be addressed in one page or just a few pages. We hope to have at least some different areas addressed through this legislature in this session. I think you're going to find them very complex. They're going to be very confusing. It will be a challenge. Yet I think this bill offers us an opportunity to make a mistake. And I hope you will consider public interest is not something that we should throw out and just determine that competition is public interest. Let's decide that on an individual basis so that our rural customers will not be disenfranchised from telecommunications. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions?
Senator Salo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have two questions. One, at the beginning of your testimony, you said how many local carriers you represented. Can you tell me that number again?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's 22 local exchange companies in the state. There is one circle that is not represented by our association.
Okay, and then you must forgive my second question is a bit naive, but I'm one of these people who just picks up the phone and uses it. I don't know much more about it than that. How are the boundaries of a service area established?
Under the new legislation, we're kind of curious on that, how they will be established. Right now, through regulation, Mr. Chairman, the boundaries are called study areas within our state. A local exchange company hasn't had the option in the past to go out and only serve where they want, but oftentimes, at the direction of the commission, they've had to make investments to reach communities that perhaps economically we would not want to reach, or they would not want to reach. It is a different environment now, ineligible. Another carrier can come in and ask for the opportunity to compete in a local exchange service area, which might not be the same as the one that an incumbent is currently serving. It might be less. It might be a nucleus of population. And this is a decision that can be made. And my argument is, if a company comes in to compete in an area of dense population and leave the more sparse population unserved, certainly the public interest of those citizens is not going to be served. The incumbent telephone can't afford to serve only the extremely high cost parts of its region now in Alaska. Overall, is very high cost to serve.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Rowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have online a Mr. Harry Shoshan in the state of Maryland. Mr. Shoshan, can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I can. Can you hear me all right?
We can indeed. Would you identify yourself for the record, please, and go forward?
I will. Thank you, sir. My name is Harry Shoshan, H-O-O-S-H-A-N. I'm a principal in the telecommunications consulting firm Strategic Policy Research, which is located in a suburb of Washington, D.C. called Bethesda, Maryland. I am here today as a consultant to ATU, but the perspective that I want to provide to the committee, and I apologize that my schedule is such that I'm not able to be with you in person, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify by telephone here. I had the chance this morning to be a witness in the State Affairs Committee in the House hearing on the companion bill, House Bill 501, and also to testify late last year before your counterparts in the House Labor and Commerce Committee. So again, my appreciation for your making this time available to me. I've worked on competition issues from a variety of perspectives over the years. For local telephone companies such as ATU, for long distance companies such as Sprint Canada, for state regulators, currently working with the Iowa Utilities Board. And our firm also is a consultant to the national regulator in the United Kingdom, Austel. In fact, one of my partners is there this week working on some local competition issues there. Perhaps also, as I'd like to say, I used to be somebody, and I spent 10 years on Capitol Hill, including service on the House Telecommunications Subcommittee, working in the late 70s and early 80s on the early efforts to rewrite the federal telecommunications laws. Those efforts finally bore fruit on February 8th when President Clinton signed the new Telecom Act. As has already been stated to you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the new federal statute's objective is to open all markets to competition, not just local exchange, but long distance and video or cable TV markets as well. The effort is to remove the lines between industries that have balkanized telecommunications in the United States since the mid-1950s. While the new law does retain a substantial role for the states, it nevertheless shifts substantial power to the federal government, especially to the FCC. Ultimately, for example, the FCC has the ability to preempt any state regulation that acts as a barrier to entry or restraint on competition. This raises, for me at least, the question as to why the bill before you is even needed, especially characterized as it is as some form of emergency measure that has to be acted on in its current form. I think that significantly, in looking at the new federal legislation, in several specific important areas, the final version of that bill left absolute discretion to the states. Those areas include deciding on alternatives to traditional public utility style regulation, and also implementing pricing flexibility for incumbent firms, in this case, the local exchange carriers or local telephone companies. Earlier versions of the federal legislation would have removed the state's discretion in these areas, but those provisions were dropped in order to give state commissions and also state legislators greater latitude. And I would urge you to exercise that discretion and that latitude. I'd like to make both an observation and a recommendation to this committee. First, the observation. Enactment of the new federal law should in no way foreclose the Alaska legislature from considering changes to state statute. In fact, the new federal law should provide impetus for you to move ahead to modernize your own law. Other states have done so and are in the process today of doing so. Second, a recommendation. Your efforts should be broadly focused. You should consider your own omnibus rewrite to make certain that the APUC has all the tools it needs to adapt regulation to the realities of the 21st century. For example, as I mentioned earlier, the authority to adopt alternatives to traditional public utility style regulation, the authority to permit pricing flexibility that will make certain that customers get the full benefits of competition, and by the way, to minimize cream skimming and cherry picking. And finally, the ability to forbear from regulation altogether, where regulation no longer serves the public interest. By the way, the FCC and numerous other state commissions already have those powers. So adding these provisions to any legislation you consider will not make the bill unduly complex or slow down the legislative process. Fairness and balance should not be the casualties of unnecessary haste in reporting a bill. Now, as to the bill before you today, several brief comments. First, I have to give it high marks for brevity and simplicity. As somebody said earlier, the federal legislation was 200 and some pages. It's hard to beat a one-line bill, but to me, this legislation is deceptively simple. It's far too narrowly focused and generally worded. It fails to address need for alternative forms of regulation, pricing flexibility, and the power to forbear. These elements are critical components of a fair competitive framework. There was discussion, Mr. Chairman, at this morning's hearing of the importance of one-stop shopping. In fact, I think it was raised by the witness for GCI. That is, the interest of customers to pick among competing suppliers, but ultimately to decide if they choose to buy all of their services from a single supplier. That's very critical to customers, and our work in this area suggests that that's a very important element of the competitive arena. But I would ask you, what are the pricing rules to be in this new environment? Can telephone companies compete with the new entrants, many of them large, well-supported companies such as AT&T and GCI, backed by MCI? If not, if the rules of the game are not fair, then competition will be neither full nor fair, nor will it be in customers' interest. And I think the bill before you doesn't address these important features. It also fails to address the preservation of universal service, and in fact may be read to undermine it. Now, the witness earlier, Mr. Johnson, I believe, said, oh, don't worry about it. Universal service is all taken care of in the federal legislation. Well, actually, I don't think he's correct. In fact, I know he's not correct. The new federal statute seeks to restructure only federal support mechanisms underlying universal service, not those in place today in the various states, such as Alaska. Even on the issue the bill purports to deal with, competition, it only addresses local competition. It fails to consider barriers to entry in the long-distance market in Alaska. And despite your earlier legislation, I think there's evidence that there are real barriers in that market today. For example, the apparent discrepancy between the wholesale and retail prices charged by some of the long-distance carriers. Also, to the extent that these carriers have long-term contracts with customers, which might limit competition from new entrants. These are issues that need to be dealt with in the context of making sure that there's full and fair competition. Finally, while the removal of inappropriate impediments to entry, in the words of the bill, may be an admirable goal, it should be considered in a much broader, more balanced legislative context, as indeed it was in the case of the new federal law, and probably should give much more specific direction to the APUC. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you again for the opportunity to appear. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Shushan. Was there any questions from the committee? Was there a volunteer for the omnibus rewrite? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shushan. Mark Foster, I don't know if you wanted to testify.
Let me make my comments brief and highlight one area that hasn't been mentioned. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Foster. I reside at 625 West 10th, Juneau, Alaska. I'm currently a consultant specializing in telecommunications and electric utility regulation areas. I'm a former commissioner with the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, and in that capacity served in the Western Conference of Utility Commissioners as the president and the chair of the Telecommunications Committee. Today, I appear on behalf of ATU. Let me just focus on one example of the kind of marketing and pricing flexibility issues that were referred to by Mr. Shushan. When the state of Alaska went out for a bid to get new phone services for the state here in Juneau, it had a number of offers, including one from the local phone company here, PTI Communications. They were unable to, and that was the offer they considered the best offer. Because of the regulatory process and the time it took for them to process that special contract, the state was unable to get the service from their preferred vendor, the local phone company, and they had to go outside basically and buy equipment from another vendor. It's that kind of flexibility that we're talking about to allow the local phone companies to compete with other competitors in the local phone markets. And I think that's an area you probably should look at in order to really bring forward the telecommunications structure that we have in the currently in the state sort of forward and allow competition to really occur among all the players and not just some of them. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Mark. Dean Hamlin? Before you start, Steve, we have this room until 3 o'clock. After Steve, we're going to take a short break, and I would ask anybody else who's going to testify to try to keep in mind that we will be out of here at 3 o'clock. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Steve Hamlin. I'm the president of United Utilities. We provide local telephone service to 58 communities. Most of those are in western Alaska. If you look in your packet, you can see a map of that includes in attachment 2 the villages we serve in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. There's 47 there, and I guess I'm getting thoughts that you don't have it in your packet, so I can.
That was our oversight. We can we'll make
give it to you real quickly here after the meeting. Okay. We're a local telephone carrier. We, again, provide service to 58 rural communities. We're concerned about the impacts of the federal legislation and having the state legislature give direction to the commission. In the fiscal year 97 operating budget overview of the Public Utilities Commission, the APUC has expressly asked that the legislature give it clear direction on how to deal with issues that come before the commission. When you look at Senate Bill 299, the title of it is An Act Requiring Competition in Local Exchange Telephone Services. I would refer you back to the Telecommunications Act of 1996. You'll see in the act that Congress has eliminated all barriers of entry in providing telecommunication services. You've heard arguments earlier today that about the public interest issues or whatever. It's clear in the the legislation that no state or local statute or regulation or other state or local legal requirement may prohibit or have the effect of prohibiting the ability of any entity to provide any interstate or intrastate telecommunications service. So any telecommunications provider that wants to place facilities anywhere in a state that's fit, willing, and able has the ability to do that under the new federal legislation. If you look in the federal legislation in regards to local exchange carriers, you will find that there's a very extensive list, and it's referred to as duties of local exchange carriers. And Congress here took a great deal of time and effort to explain what these duties are, because their objective was to promote competition in the local exchange market. Just some of these duties include the duty to resell our services at wholesale rates, to provide number portability, dialing parity, access to rights-of-ways, physical and virtual co-location for competitors, provide interconnection to competitors. We're prohibited from providing any cross-subsidization between non-competitive and competitive services, and there are procedures and standards that are laid out in the federal legislation for the negotiation, arbitration, and approval of interconnection agreements. And the federal legislation even goes so far as to explain how competitors can have access to our telephone poles to place attachments. Now, the FCC has been assigned the responsibility to adopt regulations that will address the details that are needed to implement the federal bill for local competition. Their first proceeding is to implement regulations by the 1st of August of this year, providing for interconnection for competitors. Now, when, and this was discussed earlier, telecommunications providers, local exchange companies, long distance companies want the ability to be able to be a one-stop provider for consumers. In other words, we want to be able to offer long distance, local, and wireless services. Today, the local exchange carriers in the state of Alaska just offer local service. United Utilities wants to also offer, and right now we've submitted an application through an affiliate and to provide long distance services. And we want the ability to be able to offer long distance services as well as local exchange services. However, we do not have a level playing field. The duties of local exchange carriers to open our markets to advance competition, those same duties do not apply to inter-exchange carriers. And this is where we need assistance from the state legislature to take those obligations that we have as local exchange carriers and have those obligations also apply to long-distance companies. Today, in the state of Alaska, we only have two long-distance companies. We have 22 local exchange carriers. The two long-distance companies are very aggressively seeking to get into our markets. They want to compete for our customers. They have a substantial advantage over us in terms of financial resources and capabilities, but we need to be able to adjust and compete.
Who are those two?
AT&T Alascom and GCI. So we need the ability to compete. So I'm here today to ask you to give us that ability to compete, to make those duties and obligations that are applicable to us to open up our markets, to make those applicable to long-distance carriers. You heard earlier that Alascom's wholesale rates are greater than their retail rates. Now, how can I resell long-distance services and compete with Alascom if their wholesale rates are greater than their retail rates? The federal legislation expressly prohibits local exchange carriers from having wholesale rates that are greater than our retail rates. So why do we have to be faced with our competitor, who has substantial advantages over us, being able to come in and compete with us and reselling their services to us at wholesale rates that are greater than their own retail rates? So that's the first barrier. The second, and there's a number of barriers. I'll give you one more example, and that's access to unbundled network elements. Today, We're implementing new technology in long distance services today in the state of Alaska. We're using something called DAMA technology. And both GCI and Alaskom are introducing DAMA technology this next year to serve many of our rural.
Could you spell that out for us?
Okay. What happens today, say a call between Hooper Bay and Bethel is routed to the satellite, to Anchorage, back to the satellite, and to Bethel. There's a double satellite hop, and that transmission delay causes problems in the quality of the circuit, your voice conversation, transmitting facts and data. With DAMA technology, there'll be a network controller located in Anchorage. The network controller, through a signaling channel, will set up the call so that it was routed from Hooper Bay to the satellite directly to Bethel, so you eliminate the double hop and the delay.
What was the technology? How do you spell that? Is it D?
D-A-M-A, DAMA, demand assigned multiple assignment, something, DAMA. So what we're faced with is we want to be able to have customers in all these rural communities. We need to have the ability to capture information from the telephone calls that are made so we can bill those customers. Now we have a choice. We can provide for that capability at each of the rural sites, which will cost us anywhere from $12,000 to $14,000, somewhere in that. Or Alaskom can provide us with that capability through the network controller, and we'll pay for that. So we can capture the information at the network controller, not have to go out to each individual location and have access to the information. But I can't get access to that information from Alaskom. Alaskom is not subject to the same requirements that we are. But we're required to unbundle our network and provide them access to comparable services, information, and facilities utilization. So there's two problems there. So the way to fix that is level the playing field. Make us all play by the same rules. There are two other areas that are actually three other areas that need to be addressed. I'll comment briefly on the next two. The APUC should be required to act in a timely manner on rate changes and requests to extend services to new areas. In the past, we've had a considerable difficulty with the commission in terms of timeliness. Now, in a competitive environment, if it takes a year to have the commission investigate our rates, to have a rate case, to set a new rate, how are we going to compete in a competitive market? It's just not going to work. So the commission needs direction from the legislature that when local exchange carriers are subject to competition, then we need to be under a different scheme. We need to have the ability to notice the public on our rate changes, but to have the commission act in a timely manner. Like, we'd like to have them be able to act within 30 days on changes, request to change our rates. And then also, on the next item, we would like the commission to be able to, once we're subject to competition, is to completely deregulate having to take and regulate our rates and come for the commission every time we want to change our rates. So once we do have competition, we want complete rate deregulation and not have commission intervention. The last item that I have is in the federal legislation, establishes the national policy for consumers in rural areas of the country to have access to telecommunication services on reasonable and affordable at reasonable and affordable rates. And the act has established a federal state joint board that's tasked with defining what universal service is, and they're tasked with taking and coming up with a mechanism to require all telecommunications providers to fund universal service and to make the cost of universal service explicit. You've heard many arguments that, geez, we need competition everywhere in the state. Competition's in the public interest. Well, I'd ask you to go to Eckwalk, Hooper Bay, Sheldon Point, and the first thing that you'll find is it's not competition that bought service to these communities. you'll find they have the best telecommunication services available, state of the art today. And what's made that available? What has made that available is the public policy that we're going to have affordable basic telecommunication services available to everybody. Competition has had nothing to do with that. You'll find, again, quality and best level service available. Now, what you will find in the federal legislation is that, and I participated in Congress the last 2 years in these debates, you'll find that the long distance carriers, AT&T and GCI, MCI, what they want to do is to come into our markets and have access to that high cost support that we get that's available to us as carriers today to support those facilities we have in rural areas. So they want to be able to compete for that. And Congress has said, well, we're going to get out of this and leave this up to the states because there's a valid issue here. There's going to be a limited amount of money available from the federal jurisdiction to fund universal service. Do you want that money funding duplicate facilities and duplicate services with people competing over it, or do you want to get the most mileage out of that federal support that we get for universal service?
I think so.
If you want the most mileage out of it, you will look very carefully at what GCI is telling you in this bill, and you will want to give direction to the commission that basically requires the commission to consider, in addition to the items laid out in the federal bill, whether or not having more than one carrier eligible for high-cost assistance is going to drive up the cost of high-cost assistance and ultimately result in fewer services and lesser quality services because of uneconomic duplication of facilities. So we ask you to look at that very carefully. If we don't have legislation this year, or we have this legislation, Senate Bill 299, where we're headed is that we're going to end up with less competition and fewer choices for consumers, and consumers will end up being held captive to just a few deep pocket players. In short, we're concerned that the legislature's failure to act will drive us out of business. Thank you.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Senator Duncan.
Maybe I could suggest, I've listened to all this testimony, if folks who are testifying, if they had the opportunity to kind of narrow it down in writing and give us a clear position on the bill and the pros and the cons, it would really help me. I'm kind of going back and forth here wondering where you're coming from at some points. And not just you.
Yeah.
I don't mean that just you, but the other folks are testifying also.
Well, we're a member of the Alaska Telephone Association, and we have been working with Pete Cott in House Labor and Commerce, and there is a draft being worked on of legislation that addresses the issues that I have mentioned.
But the bill is written, you're against.
Yes.
And you were making some suggestions of things we should do instead of doing this.
Yes, and we need legislation.
And you think that there should be something done this session?
Definitely.
Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute recess. We'll be back here at 25 minutes to 3. We still have David Fauske, Dennis Meininger, and Dana Tyndale to testify. If anybody else wants to testify, please sign up, and we'll be back in 10 minutes. And we'll come to the committee stand at recess.
Can I look at the testimony?
You did a good job cleaning out the room anyway. I like that we can do that. Another motion on the vote?
Nope, not yet.
I bet we have a lot of people moving.
Just to get rid of it.
Would the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee please come back to order?
That's a record.
Is Dave Fauske in the room? Mr. Fauske, start off the time is going to be reported against you. Chairman, you want to run out there and tell them to shut up? And if they'd like to, they can come back in. Fauske.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is David Fauske. I'm general manager of Arctic Slope Telephone Association Co-op. Our address is 4300 B Street, Anchorage, 99503. We serve the North Slope area of Alaska, seven villages and the Prudhoe Bay Dead Horse Industry Complex. Our company came into being in 1980. In 1977, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, my employer at the time, called me in and said, go out and form a phone company. We have to have phones or we'll never be able to implement ANGSA or a NILCA, or for that matter, establish the North Slope Borough in any kind of a proper way. And so we tried for some time to establish a business-for-profit phone entity through various joint venture efforts and so forth, and the numbers economically kept coming up co-op. Now, admittedly, there was a number of mitigating circumstances like double-digit interest at that time and so forth. So we became a co-op and have been serving the North Slope area since 1980 with digital modern service in a world consisting of traditional villages and the Prudhoe Bay Oil Complex. I mention that brief history simply because the idea of competition and entrepreneurship was where we tried to go, and economically we ran into some significant hurdles, most of which have not changed in the interim period for that particular region of Alaska. My concern with this bill is that it has no utility. I certainly don't say that with any lack of respect for either the process or the sponsor of the bill. It raises a philosophical issue, and the philosophical issue in this very brief bill simply is an attempt, as I see it, to state a very pure and simple advocacy of a principle, an economic principle. And if it is, in fact, a statement of an economic principle, the legislature, both the Senate and the House, have the means to express that in the form of a resolution. And Senate Bill 299 could be a resolution advocating local competition as a matter of economic principle for Alaska. However, I suspect, from having followed both the federal legislation and certainly the state issues over the years that I've been responsible for our rural telephone company, that there are expressed or implied complications inherent in even this very brief bill. And if they are, in fact, complications and complexities in this bill and in implementing it, then I think those issues, especially if they're reflective of some of the issues and statements and conditions that were established in the federal legislation obtain, then the Alaska State Legislature, I think, is and the public in Alaska are better served by a bill that addresses some of those issues, even if it's a more difficult task, because the end result for us and for the public, us, an operating phone company, would be a bill that guides the commission and establishes a process that it lends itself more to a reasonable and practical adjudicatory process in implementing the state's intent as well as the federal intent. So I'm not against this bill in principle. I'm simply against it as a bill. I see it as a resolution endorsing an economic principle, but I don't see it as giving the commission, the public, or an operating telephone company much guidance. I appreciate the opportunity to make the statement.
Question, Mr. Fett. When you say co-op, does that mean it's a nonprofit owned by all of the subscribers or the villages or what?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We're a subscriber-owned cooperative under the general REA, Rural Electrification Administration procedure, and our owners are village residents and ARCO and BP, so we have an interest.
For example, is the village of Fort Wainwright in your co-op?
The village of Wainwright is on the North Slope, not Fort Wainwright.
Is Wainwright hardwired in the village for telephones?
Wainwright has an outside copper plant distributed within the village, that's correct.
And then is there one uplink somewhere in the village that sends this stuff, beams it up, I guess?
Yes, each of our villages has a satellite link. Each village constitutes a separate pod out there on the tundra, somewhat limited in size and physical size and population, but it has a complete telephone system and then it links up on the satellite too.
What is a monthly subscriber rate for a home in Wainwright, for example?
Our rate for residential subscribers is $7.30 a month, and our rate for business subscribers is $15.65.
Pretty reasonable.
I think those are the least costly rates in the state. I'm sure some critics would argue that our rates are lower than a standard that perhaps they should be at to...
Moving into Anchorage?
The Federal Telecommunications Act of 1966 suggested perhaps I ought to.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
contacted us today, and they would like to have a chance to respond in writing to us.
Okay.
So they're working on that.
Okay, Dennis Niedermeyer.
Thank you for letting me speak today. I've never done this before, so you have to bear with me if I'm nervous or something. I'm an elected official of a telephone co-op. I'm basically a consumer of the, and represent consumers in my area, which includes small villages such as Igeaugic, where there's about 22 people who have telephone service, and Leavelock and Ekwok and Neustuyahawk and South Naknek and Naknek. We are opposed to the bill, just start out with. First of all, we think it sidesteps a process that needs to be attended to, as you heard earlier, to provide some direction in rural areas where there's some rural safeguards built into, or at least envisioned in the federal statute, that need to be attended to in a process that is much more complex than this bill, which says, basically, we kind of feel as though we're being thrown to the wolves. As Dave mentioned, we contributed as a co-op. Each individual member have basically invested our time and money to build a good service. We believe we have some of the best digital equipment, have foregone dividends to ourselves to build up a system, and we want to protect that. We have good service. We want better service. We'd like better service. Some of the barriers we have is in the long-distance area. We can't get speed of transport to do things like interconnect or internet access, which we will be working on. But to take this short track to say that competition in itself, which is kind of like a mom and apple pie issue, I mean, who can be against competition? The issue is in rural areas is that we've seen addressed again and again, there's reasons why you don't have six power plants in a community selling to, you know, everybody running their own power plant because they can't get along and cooperate with each other. It costs more to operate with multiple infrastructure built in some of these small communities than it does less. So the bill purports to result in lower services and some of the things that seem to be obvious. They're not so obvious. This is a much more complex issue than is addressed by, we believe, this bill. And so that's why we stand opposed to this bill, in that it's far too simplistic in its nature, opens up the opportunity for, we think, duplication and for hurting our customers. I mean, if our people end up paying more, they're going to be pissed. I mean, they're going to be very upset. And we see that happening through some things that could happen as a result of just blithely saying, well, let's make competition for the sake of competition in small communities where there's 28 consumers. It just doesn't make any sense.
Do you have an idea of what a resident subscription rate in Neustuyahawk is, for example?
I mean, as is for mine, I pay $22 a month for basic hookup. I have teenagers, so I have call waiting, so I pay an extra dollar. there are other, you know, services that you can get provided if you want to pay more. So, but I don't know how that compares to Anchorage or Juneau, but.
Is anybody from ATU here? What is our residence rate in Anchorage, Gordon? Do you know offhand?
About $9 and something a month, which was, you know, understanding that that was a policy decision by the APUC. Our last rate case, we actually asked for a little more than that, and they raised some of our business rates and said that the residential rate will stay at about $9.30 something a month.
And I guess the issue is to put at risk the large investment and the large commitments to loans and whatnot that we've made in our local telephone company by allowing a dilution of that through maybe inappropriate competition, maybe appropriate, with this short of a review scares us. And I mean, we're opposed.
Question?
Thank you.
Howard Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Howard Garner. I'm the Executive Vice President of Alaska Power and Telephone Company. It's a holding company of eight public utility services, both serving both the electric and telephone markets.
Is that here in Juneau?
No, we are We're based out of Port Townsend, Washington, and we serve Skagway, Tok, Craig. We have a total of 15 telephone exchanges serving about 3,500 customers. We're a unique organizational form. Our company is an investor-owned company, for-profit. We pay state income taxes, and we're owned primarily by our employees. Our retired and active employees, through our ESOP program, own about 85% of our outstanding shares. And it's the primary vehicle that our employees use for long-term retirement planning and savings. We also are opposed to this bill as written. In our local service areas in rural Alaska, similar to the earlier comments you've heard, we don't think this bill fits. Now, we at the same time are fully aware of the immense federal legislation that was just passed and the need to move forward with clear policy statements to the EPUC by the legislature. It is also our contention that additional work needs to be done. Other questions need to be evaluated and reviewed. We are quite concerned about our investment. We've invested heavily in the communities where our employees live and work. We're quite concerned about protecting those investments and having a fair chance to not only earn a return on those investments, but to earn back the investments. As a result of those investments, we take great pride in the quality of service that we provide. We believe it is truly state-of-the-art for our service areas, and we don't see that competition per se is going to improve the level of service nor reduce the cost in these rural isolated areas. That's really all I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Dana Tingle.
Thank you. My name is Dana Tindall. I'm the Senior Vice President for Legal and Regulatory Affairs for GCI. My business address is 2550 Denali, Suite 1000, Anchorage, Alaska, 99503. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify this afternoon and clear up some of the issues that I think have come before you. This bill before you is a very simple idea. It is a philosophical idea. It is whether you simply believe in competition or you don't. The federal legislation mandated that competition in all levels of the telecommunications business will be open to competition. That is our national policy. It does allow telephone companies with less than 2% of the nationwide access lines to try to make a burden of proof argument that interconnecting with competitive local telephone companies is not in the public interest. Without this legislation before you today, we will have competition. It is the national policy. The federal legislation does require it. It expressly prohibits any barriers to competition. Without this legislation, we will also have 22 separate proceedings and fights before the Alaska Public Utilities Commission on whether or not interconnection with competitive local telephone companies is in the public interest, with the incumbent local telephone companies having to bear the burden of proof for that. There's no need for it. We have argued this issue ad nauseum. This is a simple bill. It doesn't include all of the concerns you've heard because it is a very simple idea. Do you believe in competition or don't you? This bill leaves the implementation of fair competition up to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. Indeed, it requires it. It says in finding number 4, the commission should oversee competition in local exchange telephone service to ensure that competition is fair to consumers and competitors. This is a requirement that there be a level playing field. GCI would have it no other way. We have fought too long on an unlevel playing field ourselves to want that. The APUC today has the right to forbear from any regulations. It is expressly in their own regulations. They can waive any regulation they would like. This also gives them the right to adopt pricing flexibility for local telephone companies. The legislature could direct the APUC to do this, but this is more in the lines of an implementation issue. This calls into question whether or not a given local telephone company has market power before you give them pricing flexibility. But the APUC does have the authority to give them pricing flexibility. It has the authority to forbear. It has the authority to bring in new and more modern regulatory styles. What the APUC lacks today is simple policy guidance on whether or not competition is a good idea. And that simple policy guidance will color everything they do in implementing this new world. It will help them decide whether a specific issue is economically burdensome or not, whether or not it's worth it. It will help them decide whether or not the technical innovations that have to take place in order to facilitate competition is worth it. If the policy directive is that competition is a good and that we should go forward with it, the APUC will be able to do it. If there is no policy directive, we will be before the APUC for 3 more years arguing over the issue of competition. And mind you, in the end, there will be competition. It is our national policy. But Alaska will be way behind the power curve.
Do those opposing bill concede that there will be 22 separate hearings?
I think one of the witnesses said that they wanted to decide competition on an individual basis.
Which means what?
Case by case, telephone company by telephone company.
That would be decided by the APUC?
And without policy guidance by the legislature. I'd like to close with saying that, and this may surprise some of the witnesses here, I am sensitive to the changes competition will bring to the incumbent local telephone companies' owners' lives. It won't be easy. It's a whole new way of doing business. I hope there will be no losers. It's possible there will be. But I think there's enough protection in there that there won't be. But I think what's important to remember in thinking about competition is who we're really trying to serve, and that's the consumers. And they will be the winners. There is universal service protection in here. The legislation that was passed 5 years ago gives state protection for universal service. The witness from Washington, D.C., I don't think he's read our statutes or regulations. We do have the ability to have universal service funds in Alaska. The APUC's never implemented it.
Dana, could you explain universal service to us?
Yes, universal service is the notion that every consumer has the right to basic telephone service. And in the lower 48, that's often just thought of as local telephone service. But in Alaska, it includes long-distance service as well, because we have such vast distances up here. It is the notion that they have such a right to this basic local telephone service that if it cannot be provided to them on an affordable basis, that the industry will subsidize telephone services so that it will be provided on an affordable basis. With the exception of ATU, all the local telephone companies in Alaska receive high-cost assistance federally to help them with their telephone service bills. There is still protections for that high-cost assistance. There is protection for universal service. There is an ability for a competitive local telephone company coming in to get access to that universal service fund as well, if they are willing to take on all the service obligations that the incumbent local telephone company is willing to take on. The FCC is going to promulgate regulations to implement all that. And they're going to do it to protect universal service. The mandate is protection of universal service. That's the mandate. They have no choice but to do that. And in addition, the state has the power not to let a competitive local telephone company provide service to anyone unless they're willing to provide service to everyone. So the state has the power to prohibit cream skimming under the federal legislation. The reason this bill is so simple that before you today is because the feds did it all. They really did. They took care of it all, except for, in very few instances, on the issues of interconnection, the philosophical decision of whether or not competition's in the public interest for the very small rural telephone companies. And they put the burden of proof on the rural telephone companies. It's a very high burden of proof, but it's one that will keep us fighting for years. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, that's the end of our witness list. Chairman, would you ask the APUC to give us their position in writing, please, by Thursday meeting? And then we'll go up again on Thursday. Any other business to come before the committee? Any comments being adjourned?
I think that's right. Thank you.